Hello and welcome. It's Sunday and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader and this is Beyond the Darkness. I've got an interesting show for you today. I know for years people have been asking me to do a show about inventor Nikola Tesla. And I've always kind of pushed it off as, what is the angle? What do we want to come in with on this? And I don't want to do a show just to do a show. Well, on Friday, May 4th, the History Channel debuted The Tesla Files, a new series on the controversial inventor Nikola Tesla, whose inventions included a powerful death ray and an earthquake-producing device, as well as an invisible space shield that could cloak our nation against possible foreign missile attack. And the guest that I saw that would be involved in this, Emmy Award winner Tim Swartz, is appearing on that History Channel series on the controversial inventor Nikola Tesla. And I thought, well, let's get Tim on here and discuss this. You are the author as well, interviewed on part of the series for the book The Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla, Time Travel, Alternative Energy, and the Secret of Nazi Flying Saucers. And boy, if that doesn't capture the whole idea of our show, I don't know what does, Tim. Welcome back.
Why, thank you, Dave. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
This is fascinating. And there are a lot of people that, you know, we've heard the name Tesla, we've heard the name Edison, we've heard names like that bandied back and forth, and people know, it seems, very little about these guys. They know that there was kind of a controversial rivalry between them, mm-hmm. and that a lot of things Edison was attributed with, and some other inventors, Tesla really kind of had made his mark on it prior to this. So, you know, fascinating guy. Can you give us a little background on Tesla and who he was and how he came up and became, you know, one of the greatest thinkers in our history?
Sure. Well, Nikola Tesla was born in 1856 in what is now Croatia. At that time, I think it was still part of the, like, Austro-Hungary Empire. The night that he was born, there was like an incredible thunderstorm going on, which was really fitting considering Tesla's life and his interest and inventions, because, you know, he's been known as the man of lightning because early on he developed a fascination with electricity and electromagnetism and, you know, vibrations, frequencies, and, you know, all these fun things that now really make up so much of our modern technology. And Tesla, really early on in his life, showed that spark of genius. I suppose that, you know, I really can't think of, you know, any other more apt description. There's only been a few people in this who's come about in this world that has that type of spark. It's almost like they have a personal connection with the universe or something. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, I think, is another person that really comes close to having that type of universal genius. And Tesla fits right up there. You know, his father was an Orthodox priest, and his mother was really, you know, just nothing more than, you know, I don't want to say nothing more than a housewife, because it was probably from her side that Tesla got his fantastic intelligence, because, you know, she was an incredibly intelligent woman herself. I mean, she was the type of person that she would make like little inventions to make running the household easier. And I think that's where really Tesla got his smarts from. But,
Now these different tools, though, was it just like the spanking spoon? So it's not really an invention. It's just a wooden spoon she used to spank him. Or
No. Not quite like that, though. Whoever invented that, I'm sure that there's a lot of mothers who are happy that they did. No, she actually, I mean, she came up with really unique ways to, say, like, do the household wash. Because, I mean, you know, now their family was by no means poor, but, you know, in 1850s, you know, early 40s Croatia, you know, you didn't really have a lot of mechanical items or you know, technology available to you. But I mean, you know, she came up with some really unique ways to do like the household laundry and things like that. Tesla, you know, I mean, he took that spark and he ran with it. And his father actually wanted him to join the ministry and be an Orthodox priest like he was. But Tesla, when he was a teenager, he became very sick with, I think it was like the yellow fever, and almost died. He made his father promise him that if he pulled through, that he wouldn't have to join the church, and instead could go off and further his education, you know, by joining university. And fortunately for us, he did survive, and he then went out of Croatia and into Europe to attend several universities. He was the type of guy that he was already probably more intelligent than a lot of his professors. So he ended up not finishing university and just immediately started going to work. You know, like one place he worked for was like the national telephone company to help, you know, like develop the switchboards and the wirings and things like that. You know, these were the very early days of wired telephone. And eventually, his desire was to go to the United States and, ironically, work for Thomas Edison. And he was able to do so because one of his employees wrote him a very glowing letter of recommendation for Tesla. So Tesla was able to immigrate to New York, and Edison hired him basically on the spot. Edison could tell that, you know, here was a smart guy, and so he put Tesla to work right away. Unfortunately, because of that, you know, that was the beginning of what everybody, you know, likes to call, you know, like the clash of currents. You know, you had these two great minds and two great egos butting head to head. Now, at this time, Edison was already very well established in the United States, and here was this this brash kid coming over from Europe who obviously was a lot smarter than Edison. Now, I know that right now it's really popular for people to trash Edison, you know, Edison was a pretty smart guy. He definitely wasn't the genius that Tesla was, but Edison had an eye for business, and he knew how to take a concept and then to give it to, say, like his engineers, because that's the way that Edison did it. I mean, he would say, you know, I think this would be a good idea. So then he would give it to his engineers to develop it, and then
so he was kind of the big dreamer, and then he had the right people around him that could take what he was talking about and make it reality.
Exactly. Gotcha. Exactly. And then take all the credit for it.
Well, that's the way life works, right?
Well, you know, I mean, look at the Disney company, you know, like Walt Disney. That's the way that Walt Disney operated. I mean, you know, he had all these, you know, wonderful artists and cartoonists working for him, but it was always Walt Disney's name, you know, that you saw. Most people have no idea the people who did all the real, you know, drawing and writing. It was the same thing with Edison. So when Edison hired Tesla, he immediately put him to work trying to fix. At that time, Edison had already in New York, in Manhattan, a DC, direct current electrical system put in place. I mean, you know, it wasn't across the entire island, but, you know, he had, you know, a pretty extensive network. Unfortunately, with DC current, it only will travel so far for, you know, across the wires, you know, maybe just a couple of blocks. And then it has to be, you know, stepped up again and then, you know, retransmitted. So every couple of blocks, you know, you would have new transformers that would take the DC current and send it on. And those transformers were not very efficient. They were constantly breaking down. So Tesla was immediately put to work trying to repair these things. And Edison had promised Tesla with one job in particular that that was stumping all of his other engineers and electricians, that if Tesla could fix this, that he would pay him, God, I can't remember what it was, like $50,000 or, you know, it's really some outrageous sum of money. So Tesla took him at his word and fixed this problem in less than 48 hours. When, you know, I mean, it was expected that this was going to be something that was going to take, you know, weeks, maybe even, you know, a month or so. So Tesla came back and said, okay, it's fixed. Where's my money? And Edison's just kind of like brushed him off saying, oh, well, you know, you just don't understand that, you know, the American sense of humor. Well, yeah, Tesla didn't understand that American sense of humor and promptly quit. And, for a while, you know, had was just doing menial jobs. He was digging ditches and things like that. But fortunately, you know, when he came to the United States, he already had his design for the alternating current motor. This was something that he had already developed when he was still living in Europe. So he presented this in front of a number of associates, electricians, and the Westinghouse, the guy who, you know, would later go on to bring us GE, General Electric, saw this and like, wow, this is fantastic. This is going to put us on the map. So he helped Tesla get a patent, an American patent for the AC motor. And then the rest was history, because the AC motor was so much more efficient than DC. And from there, they were able to build the generator plant at Niagara Falls. They won the contract to light the Chicago World's Fair, so on. And, you know, that was the start of the second industrial revolution. And I mean, we're still in this today. Practically every bit of our technology that we are enjoying right now can be traced back to Nikola Tesla. That's succinct enough for you?
It is. What an amazing legacy. I mean, to be able to say that, that's, you know, he's the Stan Lee of the real world, right? I mean, he has a hand in an entire universe of creations. And although he might not have, you know, hand-built everything, he was involved in these creations and ideas that are still going strong today. Now, there is so much talk about this guy and that he was otherworldly. Why do you think that there is this legend surrounding this man? I mean, there are geniuses and there are people in this world that are adept at doing things in the field that they do. But why do you think he's got this legend built around him that he was either, you know, a time traveler or from, you know, an alien race?
Well, pretty early on, after he died, stories started circulating that that Tesla was so smart that he had to be, you know, unhuman, you know, not from this world. I know that there was a book that was written really, gosh, in the early 1950s, called what was it? Nikola Tesla and the White Dove, and in that it was speculated that that he actually, you know, was an extraterrestrial that was put here on this planet. You know, possibly, you know, at that time everybody was really into the whole contactee movement. You know, George Zamsky and the Space Brothers, and so, you know, like, well, Tesla may have been like a Venusian, you know, put here to help us take that next big step forward in technology.
And that is, I didn't just bring that up or pull it out of my butt saying that, you know, he was believed to be a time traveler or an alien. That was really kind of the talk of the time, right?
Oh, yes, very much so, very much so. And, you know, it to me, see, it sort of gives disservice to humanity, to human beings, that, you know, saying that, you know, we are really not capable of achieving such genius. And I think, you know, that's just not true. I mean, you know, of course, unfortunately, I never got to meet the man. So, I mean, I can't tell you definitively that, you know, that he wasn't a time traveler or an extraterrestrial, but I don't think he was. I think that he was a human being, and that, you know, every once in a while you'll just, you know, we will produce somebody like him that just goes on and just really moves mankind forward. You know, in technology and in just the way that we experience the world. I mean, you know, Tesla was not only a genius when it came to, you know, engineering and things like that, but I mean, he was postulating scientific principles that were really unheard of at the time. You know, a lot of people will, you know, kind of treat Tesla with some disdain, saying that, oh, well, he was just an engineer. How do you like that? You know, that he really wasn't a scientist. He was just a guy who made, you know, interesting mechanical items, but, you know, he was lacking scientifically, which, I mean, it's just like, no, okay, no, wait a minute. Where do you get that from? You know, it's just, I don't understand that mindset, because you have to understand that when Tesla was really at his peak, you know, in the late 19th and early 20th century, I mean, his mind was coming up with things that we're just now catching up to. And in fact, you know, there are things I was reading not too long ago. There are items that that scientists, physicists are trying to take patents on, only to find out that Tesla had beat them to it. Yeah, of course, you know, now Tesla's patents has expired, but what I'm saying is that, you know, a lot of things that, you know, that people think that that they're just coming up with now, Tesla beat them to the punch, you know, a century ago. And to me, that is what is really fascinating about this guy, is that, I mean, he was coming up with things that, you know, the technology that he had available to him at the time was not able to help him see a lot of his dreams, a lot of his ideas that he was, you know, that he was conceiving. And I mean, you know, he could just barely scratch the surface on the stuff that he wanted to do and that he thought was possible. And now a lot of this stuff is really coming true. So I think that the idea that, that he was more than human, yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think that he was human. He was an extraordinary human, and that we could really use a few more people like him surfacing. But you know, I think that especially that the way the modern era works, a lot of times that genius can be stifled extremely early on, either through, you know, the lack of funds or being pigeonholed. You know, if you're somebody who has a mind like Tesla, that, you know, because, you know, he would be working on one item and then suddenly he would get an idea for something else and he would go to that, leaving the other behind. And that wouldn't fly if you were working, say, you know, like for, you know, the government or the military or a big corporation. So I think that a lot of things that that Tesla was coming up with, probably he wouldn't have been able to deliver nearly half the things that he did in his lifetime if he was working today, just because of the way the system works.
What a remarkable man. Yeah, and you're right. I talk about that a lot on our show, that I think we do a disservice to ourselves as humans by talking down the capabilities that were really, you know, that are maybe not so far out of reach. And the idea that this guy was just a genius and was such a thinker. I wonder now if in today's standards they would look at him and see him as somebody that was a high-functioning autistic person.
Possibly.
The reason I say that is because that extreme focus and the way one would bump into another, you know, again, being the stepfather of a boy that's got a high level of Asperger's and autism, I watch the way the mind works, and it's fascinating, the logic jumps and leaps and how he is so creative, and it takes you into those different points. And again, maybe I'm doing a disservice again, saying that it has to be something in that order, and it could just be somebody that, you know, is working on a normal level. But it's remarkable that he was so forward-thinking. You know, but I know they give a lot of that credit too to Leonardo da Vinci, right? For the imaginations and the things he did. But was he really that creative or that big of a genius to just draw wings on people and suddenly, oh, look, he thought about flying years ago? I mean, the concept was always there. If you see a bird and you watch these things and you're an artist, it may give you these ideas, you know, that really aren't that far of a stretch if you are paying attention.
Mm-hmm. I really think that from what we now know about people who are on the spectrum, that Tesla may have fit within that category. He did have this ability where he would have, as he would call them, visions. If he was working on an idea, it was like his subconscious was working on it at double time. And suddenly he said that he would have these visions that would appear, as he would describe them, just right in front of his eyes. It would almost be like a holographic a projection to him, where he would see this invention in front of him in 3D. With his mind, he could mentally turn it in any direction. He could take it apart. He could put it together. He would know from that point on how this device or whatever it was that he was working on would work, the parts that he would need to create to put it together. And he also knew that once he was able to physically build it, that it would work exactly as he imagined it. So, to have that kind of intense focus is, I think, a fairly unique characteristic for some people. And of course, I mean, you know that as Tesla, as he grew older, he became more eccentric. And I think some of these aspects of his personality that he either kept suppressed when he was younger, because I mean he was a pretty social guy when he was younger. I mean, you know, when he achieved his level of success and notoriety, I mean, he enjoyed going out and attending functions and speaking in front of audiences. I mean, the ladies loved him. I mean, he was a very good-looking guy. I mean, you know, he was well-spoken. He was tall, but as he grew older, he lost a lot of that desire to interact socially. By the time he finally died in 1943, he was living alone in two hotel rooms in the New Yorker hotel in Manhattan, and his best friends were pigeons. So, I mean, here you had this guy in his younger days that, I mean, he was the darling of society. He was this master of science and inventions. And then at the end of his lifetime, he was basically forgotten. Or at least some of the things that I have uncovered over the years, possibly he wasn't quite as forgotten as some of the popular literature has it, but compared to how he was living in the late 19th and early 20th century, yeah, he was almost basically forgotten.
at any point, was he ever looked at as a madman, or was he always considered a genius? Was there a dark period in his career and life?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like I said, at the end of his lifetime, he had been pretty much regulated to, you know, a mad scientist. In fact, there's a Fletcher Brothers Superman cartoon that was made in the 1940s, where the mad scientist who had a death beam that he was using to melt bridges and buildings and everything like that, the guy's name was Tesla. So I don't think that was a coincidence. So yeah, I mean, you know, here you had this guy that in his heyday was being hailed a genius and like I said, the master of the new industrial revolution, and then really not that long afterward, you know, 30, 40 years after that point, he was forgotten and thought of as a lunatic, as a mad scientist. Of course, now some of the propaganda that Edison had put up against Tesla, especially after Tesla had some financial disasters, Edison took that opportunity really to, you know, kick a man while he was down, and a lot of that stuff stuck. So in Tesla's later days, he was considered, yeah, you know, this guy was, you know, he was smart when he was younger, but, you know, he's a nobody now.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's really, really sad.
Do you think it's because as he got older, he stopped thinking inside the box and started exploring more of the possibilities like time travel, space travel, death rays? Do you think that that's what started to lend to his stigma that began to appear around him?
Oh, well, it didn't help. You know, especially because of his concepts of his death beam. Because Tesla would take, you know, on his birthday every year, you know, the New York newspapers would interview him. Bless them. They still remember this great guy. So they would always do articles about him on his birthday, and he would tell them about, you know, the things that he had been working on or conceiving. And one time, and this would have been in the 1932, I think, he made the announcement that he had finally perfected his idea for a death beam. And at this time, the whole idea of death rays and death beams, I mean, that was really a hot commodity. I mean, it was really popular, you know, in science fiction. You have Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers. You know, they had their handheld death ray pistols and stuff. And there were various countries like Japan and Great Britain who were working on concepts like that. Well, Tesla had, from experiments that he had done years previously, had finally perfected this idea that he had for a death beam. I mean, we would call it now a particle beam weapon, because as Tesla conceived it, you would have an electrical field that you would then inject particles, you know, like finely ground up particles, and I can't remember what types of magnesium, maybe, or, you know, something like that. But I mean, so finely ground down that they would be, you know, like not less than, say, like a cigarette smoke. I mean, you know, they'd be, you know, that small. They would then become electrified, and you could then shoot them out basically out of like the barrel of an electrified gun at almost light speed. And he claimed that this could shoot down aircraft or missiles up to 200 miles away from their originating point. Now, that was something, you know, back in the 1930s, that was science fiction. And so, yeah, it's no wonder that a lot of people, and especially a lot of his colleagues and scientists, especially younger ones who were not around in his heyday when he was really hot and popular. They would just be like, oh God, this Tesla, you know, why doesn't he just shut up and die? You know, cause he's just coming up with all these crazy things and making us, the rest of us scientists, look bad. When actually, like you said, he was thinking, and I hate this term, he was thinking outside of the box, and we now are at a time when we're inside that box again, and, those concepts, aren't so crazy after all.
No, it would seem not. I'm surprised, though, and are you a little surprised that having that kind of mind, that the government did not snatch him up and kind of keep him comfortable for the rest of his life, even on his crazy machinations, the idea that he's got some great stuff, he's certainly got the work behind it, let's keep him under our control and happy and comfortable for the rest of his life?
Part of the problem was that before Thomas Edison passed away, he was working on the consulting board for the, I think it was the Navy in Washington, D.C. And part of his job with this consulting board was that scientists, inventors, companies would approach this board with ideas for weapons. And Tesla had approached them several times with various concepts, one of them being radar. Tesla had an early idea and version of not only radar, but I guess sonar as well. As well later on with the concept of the death beam. And Edison reportedly told the rest of the men on the board that Tesla's just he's crazy. Don't listen to him. And so he was, you know, he was nixed. So, I mean, Tesla had that problem right there with Edison's revenge, because, you know, you realize that once AC current took a hold in this country, that Edison's idea for DC current, because Edison, you know, he was making money off of his DC current. And I mean, he had the concept that he was going to, you know, spread this across the United States and he was going to become even richer than he already was. Well, Tesla, you know, he put a stop to that right away. And Edison, I mean, he was, he vowed revenge on Tesla for doing this. And Edison went as far as to do things like electrocute animals and an elephant even using AC current to show people how dangerous AC was. You know, look at this, you know, this madman Tesla and Westinghouse, they want to put this dangerous current into your house. This current's so dangerous that it can kill an elephant. Edison actually invented the first electric chair using AC current that was used to kill a prisoner, a guy who was on a death row. But I guess that it was not very efficient, and the guy just kind of sat in the chair and sizzled for a while before they finally had to pull him out of it, and then he died later from burns. I mean, it didn't work too good. But, you know, that was the kind of stuff that Edison was doing to try to besmirch the name of Tesla. So, you know, later on, after Tesla's his disaster with his trying to produce the wireless transmission of electricity, and he saw his finances collapse because of that. Well, Edison just really helped stick that knife in even deeper and then twist it around a little bit, you know, severing some arteries in the spine in the process. So it was very difficult then for Tesla to regain any credibility on a large scale after that.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're up against a break. Why don't we we'll cut away. When we come back, I want to talk about time travel, the secret of Nazi flying saucers, some of the other fringe elements of this man's story, and educate our listeners on this. It's so fascinating. What a remarkable man. And our guest, Tim Swartz, no slacker either. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, it's time to dig into the Darkhives. You've got it. It's time for another edition of Theater of the Mind.
Hello, Tim and Dave. It's me again, Nyx. This time, I have an experience that I'm not sure how to classify. I have no idea what it was. If it was a glimpse into an alternative timeline, the imaginings of a child desperate to escape her reality, or if I'm insane. But what of the others out there? The ones like me who have no history of psychosis, who lead normal lives but yet still manage to somehow see what lives at the peripheral? Well, I'll leave that up to you and the listeners. I'm 10 years old or so, judging by the apartment in my memory. I don't recall why I decided to leave my room and walk down the hall to the kitchen, but it was probably to grab a drink or something to eat. The most vivid part of my memory is when I walked into the haze as I entered the kitchen. It was a wavy, wobbly type of haze, clear like the heat rising from hot asphalt on a summer's day. But you never walk into that haze. You could chase it all day and never catch up to it. I know. As a child, I tried. But this haze surrounded me, blurred my vision of the room around me and of my mother standing at the kitchen sink doing dishes. But as I took a step forward, I left that blurriness behind me. I didn't look back at this point. I was instead fixated on the wrongness of what I was seeing. The kitchen was cleaner. My mom was noticeably thinner, though not by a lot, just enough to be different. And the light coming from the window above the sink seemed off, like a midday summer storm was rolling in. I didn't speak to her, but that's not unusual. It was always best for me to remain silent when I was at home. I did, however, walk up to the counter by the sink and hop up onto it, something I never would have done while she could see. And that's when I noticed I couldn't hear the water. I couldn't hear anything. And she didn't seem to notice me either. My attention was drawn to the window when she looked up and out of it, staring across the street at the other block of apartment buildings. But I looked down the road and into a pink-orange sky with a dirty gray hue to it. Now, I associate that look with what movies and video games use as a fallout backdrop. But I didn't know that at the time. It just looked like a really bad storm, but without rain or wind. As I tried to look out through the blinds to get a better view without falling into the sudsy water, it also dawned on me that we didn't have blinds on our kitchen window, just curtains. I remember the panic starting to take hold. I don't know why that was the catalyst of my fear response, but it was. I jumped down from the countertop and looked at my mother's back for a second, confused. I didn't know what to say or even if I should speak. I turned to go back to my room, and that's when I noticed the wavy, wobbly, heat-like haze again. I ducked my head and walked very quickly through it, with my eyes squinted somewhat shut. The haze cleared as I entered the hallway, or maybe a little earlier. My vision wasn't as clear with my eyes half shut. When I got to my room and I calmed down, everything seemed to be normal, but I didn't look outside, and I didn't leave my room until bathroom needs forced me to do so. Everything seemed normal when I finally had the nerve to glance in my mother's direction. So, like I said, I don't know what this was, nor have I ever experienced anything like it since. I'll leave the what, why, and how to the Darkness Army, and leave you all with my thanks for listening to my experience.
Darkness.
Welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. And remember, you get us every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with brand new episodes and Theater of the Mind. And then Monday through Friday, check me out as the new host of Midnight in the Desert. You'll be able to listen to that at midnightinthedesert.com. I'm live Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Pacific time. And that is 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Central Time. That is midnight till 3 a.m. Eastern Time. You can find all the information by visiting midnightinthedesert.com, and you can subscribe and never miss the episode. So if you're not a late night owl, you can subscribe to the service and always get the shows delivered to you on a daily basis. Go check it out at midnightinthedesert.com. Plus, we've got our True Crime Tuesdays that will continue on as always, and we've got some great stories building up for you guys. I think you're going to absolutely love. If you have not subscribed yet, just check out patreon.com, and then we are True Crime Tuesday. patreon.com/truecrimetuesday, or you can always email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I can send you links to make it easier to find each and every one of the programs we're a part of. We're back tonight. Tim Swartz, our guest, as we talk about the lost journals of Nikola Tesla, time travel, alternative energy, and the secret of Nazi flying saucers. You are telling me off air as well that there is some connection to Nikola Tesla and chemtrails. Do you mind elaborating on that a little bit for me?
Yeah, sure. Well, when I originally was putting this book together, which would have been back around 1998-1999, chemtrails was a really hot subject, and I guess it still is with some people. But at the time, my publisher, Timothy Green Beckley, wanted me to include something on chemtrails, in the book, because it was a popular item. And so when I conducted some research on it, I actually found that there was a possible Tesla type connection to chemtrails. There was an actual scientific study that had been done concerning global warming, and the idea being that you could go and inject the atmosphere with chemicals that would produce artificial clouds that would then act as like a shield, so to speak, to bounce the sun rays back off and to slow down global warming. One of the ideas on how to produce this shield would be to have a radio transmitter very similar to the HARP array that was, and possibly still is, operating in Alaska, that would broadcast on certain frequencies. You would then take jet planes flying at a fairly high altitude that would then eject into the atmosphere particles of aluminum, I think, is what it was, in a base of dry ice. And you have to forgive me, Dave. It's been so long since I wrote this. I don't remember exactly what the chemical formulation was.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
But it was something along those lines. Okay. So these metallic particles would then align themselves with these broadcasted electromagnetic radio frequencies that would align themselves with the magnetic field around the planet, and then these chemtrails would then spread out from that point. And, you know, if you did it in a correct grid-like fashion, they would connect themselves together and create this cloud-like formation. Now, this study was done actually before the whole controversy of the chemtrails took place. And at the time, there were some people who actually did some analysis of the material that seemed to be coming, you know, falling out of these chemtrails. And wow, lo and behold, they contain the exact same metallic particles and chemical compositions as was part of this earlier scientific study. So I had, you know, speculated in the book that, that possibly, with the help of HARP, that the chemtrail situation may have been an experiment to see if this would have some kind of minor effect. You know, because you weren't covering the entire globe, you were just covering certain sections, you know, say of the country, and then using a Tesla-based electromagnetic radio frequency to produce this effect. You know, it was speculation on my part, but I just found that the similarities between what was people were actually seeing at that time and from this earlier scientific paper, you know, it just seemed a little too close to coincidence for me. And I don't know. I mean, it's still kind of a favorite theory of mine. If chemtrails are a reality, and, you know, Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, or Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, let's put it that way, you know, I may be more inclined to believe in chemtrails, while, you know, Tuesday, Thursdays, and the weekend, not so much. But that's, you know, that's how the idea of chemtrails came about in the first edition of the book.
I'm interested in that, the fact that with the chemtrails and the fact that he was also working on a shielding environment for our country, right, to protect mm-hmm. us. Could there have been something to this? Is there's been this conspiracy that chemtrails are, in fact, putting up kind of a chemical barrier to keep us safe from alien intervention, from, you know, other weapons that may be diffused by entering the skyways over these major cities. What's your take on that conspiracy, and is that something you're familiar with?
Yeah, well, Tesla's concept of the Tesla shield was more of a electromagnetic shield rather than using chemicals and, say, you know, rarefied metallic particles. Tesla's idea was that you would have various transmitters located, say, you know, encircling a city, or, you know, even if you could get it powerful enough, you know, encircling a country. And these would then broadcast on specific frequencies to produce almost like an electromagnetic pulse that would effectively create a electromagnetic shield over an area that then aircraft, missiles would not be able to penetrate. The interesting thing about this concept is that in the 1960s, especially, there were some reports coming out of the Middle East, like Iran or Turkey, some of these countries that bordered the Soviet Union at the time, where aircraft pilots were seeing these balls of light suddenly appear in the distance, you know, over what would then be, you know, Soviet territory, that would suddenly just appear on the horizon and expand hundreds of miles, remain in place for up to, I think, 15 minutes to a half hour, and then slowly dissipate. Their descriptions and the after effects, their radio systems would be filled with static. They couldn't communicate with their airports. Compasses, because at that time, you know, they didn't have GPS.
Right,
they had to rely
right.
on compasses, you know, would go crazy. And, you know, it sounds very much like Tesla's idea for a Tesla shield. And we do know that the Soviet Union had managed to get a hold of a lot of Tesla's notes and paperworks along those lines. And in fact, you know, Nikita Khrushchev in the late 1950s had even bragged in front of the UN that they had a new super weapon that was even more powerful than atomic weapons, and that they, you know, if they had to, they could deploy this, and that no airplane or missile or bombs would be able to penetrate this new super weapon that they had. Again, sounds suspiciously like some of Tesla's ideas of Tesla shields, the death beam, things like that.
Oh, very, very weird. Let's talk about time travel, which is something that fascinates the living hell out of me. And I think there's different variations of it going on around us at all time. But where does Tesla come in and come down on the whole theory and belief that time travel exists?
Well, like most scientists in his day, you know, especially in the late 19th century, they really didn't have a concept of time. That was something that they just really didn't want to touch. That was something that was more for philosophers, that sort of thing. Now, you know, the idea of time, you know, then was, you know, the sun rises, the sun sets, and that's basically it. And this would have been around 1886, I think. Or 1896. This was before Tesla's Manhattan laboratory had accidentally burnt down. He was conducting some experiments using a Tesla coil to produce rotating electromagnetic fields, which was, I mean, at that time, that was a pretty bizarre concept. Tesla reached out to throw a switch to turn this coil off. As he reached out, a spark jumped from the coil and struck Tesla's outstretched hand. Tesla said, he told a reporter this afterwards, that at that moment, when he was struck by this arc of electricity, and then, you know, he was then surrounded with this electromagnetic field, he said that to him, he felt like that he had been knocked out of time. He said that his perception at that moment was that he was outside of time and space, and that he could see that time didn't exist, that there was a that the past, present, and future were one. It's really hard to describe in words, but he said that it was almost like the universe and time was an eternal now, that the past, present, and future were non-existent, and he was actually outside of it all, looking down, and he said he could see everything, the past, the present, the future, everything all at one moment. Now, this is really a mind-bending concept that a lot of people, you know, have difficulty wrapping their head around. I know I do. You know, you need to go and, you know, read some Eastern philosophy to try to get a better idea of what Tesla said that he was experiencing. So,
It sounds like a near-death experience.
Very much so. And Tesla probably would have died if it wasn't for one of his assistants who grabbed like a 2x4 and knocked him out of this spark of electricity. Because if the assistant had tried to just reach in and push Tesla or grab him, the assistant would have been electrified as well, and they both would have been standing there, coursing with electricity. But his assistant was smart enough to know that, you know, wood is non-conductive, so that he smacked Tesla across the back and then, you know, knocked him down out of the range of this spark. And so from that time on, Tesla really started to theorize about how time actually operates, how the universe actually operates. You know, before that, he really didn't have any, as far as we can tell from like his writings and books and everything like that, he really didn't have any interest in like cosmology or the universe, you know, some of these more esoteric concepts. But from that point on, he really started to work on these ideas, and it finally, you know, accumulated. Years later, he was developing his version of a unified field theory. Einstein was working on the same thing, and Einstein had always regretted that he was never able to complete his version of a unified field theory. And I think it was the same way with Tesla. Tesla had some really good ideas, and may have written it down. We have some examples that he had published in various magazines, but as for a complete working unified field Tesla-based unified field theory, nobody has ever found anything. So we don't know if he ever did complete it, and it's disappeared, which, you know, is entirely possible, knowing what we do now about his lost notes and paperwork. A lot of people have come forward now and said that Tesla had even gone as far as to build, say, like, you know, working time machines or teleporters, and that, the United States government has working devices that they're able to have, you know, like, I don't know what, like a time core or something, something along those lines. And, I'm not saying that at this point in time that such a thing is possible, but I sincerely doubt if Tesla had the ability to do something like that, to actually build, you know, some kind of working prototype of a time machine. Now, Tesla may have been able to, you know, develop the formulas on how such a thing could be possible. But it's like I said earlier, you know, a scientist and inventor can only work as far as the technology at the time will allow him to. So if Tesla did have an idea along these lines, you know, really, I mean, you're talking about, really didn't even have good vacuum tubes, you know, then. So the idea that he could have built a working time machine, to me, is pretty far-fetched. However, he may have been one of the first to actually, you know, come up with a workable formula, mathematical concept on how this was possible. As for these claims that he did actually go as far as to build a working device that was later discovered by the United States government and military, that I doubt.
All right. Now, talk to me about the Nazi UFO program and Tesla's connections to that. That's something that's fascinating. I love the idea that, I mean, I don't, that the Nazis were working on this so diligently, but the idea that somebody realized once we have domination of the air, all wars are over, and that this kind of technology was really in their foreground of work and research. How does Tesla figure into this history?
Well, because Tesla was, I mean, he really was. I mean, he was the master of of electricity and energy and vibrations and frequencies, you know, magnetism. Very early on, Tesla had noticed that there were some interesting side effects when it came to, say, like using his Tesla coil and electromagnetics. You know, it's almost as if there is a either a lifting effect or even as far as a negating of the local gravitational field. This was something that was also carried on years later by a gentleman by the name of T. Townsend Brown, who went as far as to develop devices that seemed to have disappeared, you know, within the military, vast military complex in the 1950s. Well, T. Townsend Brown was working on ideas that that Tesla had developed back in the, especially right there at that crucial point of the late 19th and early 20th century, where see, we would call it now field propulsion, which is the process of using electromagnetic fields to negate gravity. I'm not a physicist. You have to understand, you know, I'm a journalist, so I'm kind of paraphrasing here, just, you know, exactly what Tesla was doing with his concepts. But he would take, say, like a metal plate, and he would charge it with electricity, and then he would blow smoke over this, and he would get the smoke would actually lift above it. He would go as far as to he created like a crude vacuum chamber to try to see whether or not this was just, you know, like say the atmosphere was just getting charged and lifting, you know, maybe by the heat or something like that. But even in a vacuum chamber, he was seeing the same type of an effect. So there seemed to be some kind of gravitational negation going on with these high frequency fields that he was working on. Unfortunately, you know, this is one of these things that Tesla would be working on, and then he would get an idea for something else, and he would just kind of like leave it aside and then go and work on something else. And then maybe, you know, a few months, you know, a year or so later, he may get interested in it again and then come back and work on it. A lot of this stuff, you know, they were kind of like a side effects of other things that he was working on. I know that the field propulsion effects was a result of his working on the wireless transmission of electricity. And, you know, that was the thing that he was really concentrated on for so many years. So any of these other effects that he was observing, he would, you know, write them down or have his assistants write them down, because, you know, Tesla really didn't do a lot of writing. If you've ever seen any of his personal notes, they're almost illegible because he would just like scrawl them down and then go back to work. So a lot of this stuff just basically just collected in his notes and files. Mm-hmm. And, he talked about them later to reporters, and this got published. And what seems to have happened was that after the Nazis took over Germany, they put in place on the East Coast, especially, a pretty extensive spy ring, and a lot of it was centered around New York. Naturally, the idea was that they were going to, they used this ring and they infiltrated, especially manufacturing concerns, corporations and things like that, because they were trying to squirrel out as much helpful technology as they could to help in their, what was going to be, their upcoming war effort. Well, we do know that Hitler was fascinated by Tesla, Hitler had even, I guess, had tried to set into place the possible kidnapping of Tesla, that, to get him out of the United States into Germany and have him work for Hitler. Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't going to be feasible. What was feasible, though, was that there were a lot of this of Tesla's paperwork that had been left behind at various hotels and locations that Tesla had stayed in, and unfortunately, due to his monetary concerns, was forced to leave, and then left this stuff behind in lieu of payment for his outstanding bills. So a lot of this stuff was very easy to get a hold of and to take to Germany. After the end of World War II, during Operation Paperclip, which was the United States' effort to bring in former Nazi scientists, intelligence officers, people like that, Wernher von Braun, who later developed the Apollo space mission to the moon, was part of Operation Paperclip. A lot of these scientists told their American handlers that Germany had gotten hold of a lot of Tesla's notes and paperworks, especially when it came to aircraft designs, because Tesla was also interested in aircraft design, the use of radiant energy as a weapon system, and field propulsion. They didn't call it field propulsion. What was it called? It was something along the lines of electric. I can't even remember what it was called now. It was electric air movement and gravitational displacement. Something along those lines. The speculation is that because the story surfaced after the end of the war the Germans had came really, really close to developing a working anti-gravity, field propulsion aircraft, dish-shaped. The early prototypes used jets. Some even used propellers and fans. But their ultimate goal was to use some of these ideas that Tesla had with Tesla coils and electrical generators to produce an actual independently operated aircraft that didn't require jets or propellers or anything like that. Instead, it just used electrical and electromagnetic power.
Unbelievable.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's just.
I know I use that word a lot, but I mean, it fits. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Well, I think part of the thing that hampered them at the time, mm-hmm, was that they were not able to develop a generating system that was small enough to be able to be placed inside one of these crafts. Most of them had to be tethered to a generator. And then, you know, like, and then they would fly around tethered to this. Apparently, there may have been several prototypes that were able to fly independently, but at least as far as we know, it never went as far as that with the Nazis. You know, again, you know, we have a lot of, you know, like some pretty wild stories, you know, about that. But from, you know, the research that I have done, the war ended for them before they were able to really to make that one major step to get accomplished.
Tim Swartz, our guest, as we continue talking about the man, the myth, the legend, Nikola Tesla. Now, the ending of his life was, as you said, pretty sad. He had kind of become an outcast. Tell us about this kind of mysterious ending and what happened to all of the life's work and things that he had kept around at that point, the lost journals, if you will.
Mm-hmm. When Tesla passed away finally, it was in January of 1943. He was living in the New Yorker Hotel. At that time, he would have been, well, I think, 86 years old, I think is how old he was at the time. But he was still actually active in his research. His lifelong friend and personal assistant and accountant actually told the FBI that a few days before Tesla passed away that the two of them were supposed to be doing an experiment in a special laboratory that the New Yorker Hotel had established for them, but that Tesla had gotten sick and wasn't able to conduct this experiment. Now, Dave, this is an interesting recent development that I have found out, because most of the popular stories about Tesla have him at that time basically just alone, overcome with his personal eccentricities, you know, he doing nothing but feeding the pigeons in the park, that sort of thing. But apparently he still had a very active mind and was still conducting experiments in a secret laboratory there in the New Yorker. Possibly in the basement area. The New Yorker actually had several electrical generators in the basement that were powerful enough to light up the entire city block there in Manhattan just on their own. So there's an interesting possibility. Wow. The interesting possibility that Tesla was making good use of these generators independent of the Manhattan grid system. So but unfortunately, you know, Tesla about a year previously had been hit by a taxi cab while he was crossing the street one evening, and he never really quite recovered from that. You know, he was injured, you know, broke a few ribs, and so I mean, you know, he, you know, some people have speculated that, you know, this may have been a hit on him, that you know, he was still doing enough that somebody considered him a danger. I don't know. You know, it's it could have been just an accident. I do know that after that time, that the FBI put in place in the New Yorker at least one, maybe several agents who lived in the same hotel as Tesla, possibly to keep an eye on the guy, you know, either with or without his knowledge. You know, we really don't know. When Tesla died, almost immediately, his body was taken away. Even before, he had one living relative, a man by the name of Sava, who is his nephew. Sava was a Yugoslavian diplomat. By the time that Sava and a couple other guys made it to the New Yorker, Tesla's body was already gone and taken to the morgue. And this would have been just been in a matter of an hour or so. And, you know, legally, Sava would have been the one who would have had to have signed the papers to have his body taken away. But somebody else did it. Mm-hmm. And so when Sava and a couple of friends made it to Tesla's hotel room, Tesla had a pretty big safe in there filled with a lot of his belongings. And so they got a locksmith to open this safe, and apparently somebody else had been there before them already. Most of the stuff that Sava said that he knew was supposed to be in there was still there, but there were some things that were missing. One of the things that Sava said was missing was a commemorative medal that had been awarded to Tesla a few years previously on his birthday. Now, the FBI has gone as far as to say that Sava may have actually taken items himself. You know, so, you know, we have a lot of this, you know, he said, going back and forth. So we really don't know.
Was there ever any conspiracy that maybe he didn't die and he was squirreled away as part of an undercover government program?
You know, I've heard that, but considering Tesla's advanced age, his heart condition, you know, he ended up, dying of a heart attack, basically. And the accident that he had previously, I mean, if they did squirrel him away while he was still alive, I doubt if he could have lived much longer. It's, I don't know, you know, it's one of these things, you know, it's fun to speculate, but I mean, I have never run across any actual, verifiable evidence that actually happened. And, you know, I mean, when I go into this, when I do my research, you know, on Tesla and a lot of these side subjects about him, anymore, gosh, there's just so much wild stuff out there that I really need some really good verifiable information before I'll consider it.
This is the field of strange and supernatural and paranormal. Why do you need verifiable information? There's no room for that, Tim.
Oh, well, see, unfortunately, there are a lot of people who do believe that, but not me. You know, I mean, you have to remember that, you know, I spent years and years and years as a journalist, you know, writing about, just the regular stuff. And so I brought that over into this research, and I wish more people would be as responsible when it comes to verified and vetting information. And I hate to use the word fake news, but there is so much fake news out there, especially when it comes to, like you said, you know, the world of the weird and the unexplained. And it really, I mean, it does the subject a disservice when you just go and just spread, you know, the wildest stories that you possibly can run across. As it is, the stories around Tesla's death are unusual enough, so I don't really think that you have to add anything else to make them even more strange. Because you asked, Tesla had reported that he had at least 80 trunks and then probably another 50 bundles of papers, notes, journals, things like that, that he had stored at various locations, as well as at what was called the Manhattan Warehouse. This was the same warehouse that the FBI and the Office of Alien Properties took the stuff that they could find of Tesla's property. This came about actually because the vice president of the United States at the time sent a telegram to J. Edgar Hoover and said, Nikola Tesla has died, and we want to make sure that we get a hold of everything that we can of him before somebody else does. So with the assistance of, for whatever reason, the Office of Alien Property, and that's really odd because, you know, Tesla was a naturalized American citizen and had been for many, many years. So why they used the Office of Alien Property to come in and take Tesla's stuff, that's been lost in history. So they took what they could get their hands on. They went to various locations around Manhattan to try to find whatever they can. They only ended up with about 30 trunks, and then
just 30.
Well, Tesla said that he had 80. So there was a lot of it that was still out there, you know, that they didn't find. And you know, it's a lot of the people who, you know, these FBI agents and OAP agents who were out trying to get this stuff, they had no idea who Tesla was, which is, I mean, again, it's really sad because a lot of them, they just thought that Tesla was just some crazy bum, you know, because he was well known for not paying his bills. Even though at the New Yorker Hotel, the Westinghouse, the son of Westinghouse had actually taken Tesla and told him that as long as he was still alive, that he would be provided for. And so, you know, like the last, I think it was like the last 5 years of his life, he was taken care of, his bills were paid, and things like that.
Do you think there are still a few secrets left for us to uncover in the world of Tesla and where he went and where he was going?
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. We're, like I said, you know, earlier, we're just now discovering some of the stuff that he was conceiving, you know, back in the early 20th century. A lot of his ideas have been taken and developed by the military, you know, in places like that. So hopefully the civilian world will have the opportunity to take some of Tesla's ideas and run with them. You know, we're seeing some of it starting to creep out. I mean, you know, just even little things like the wireless, being able to wirelessly charge your cell phone. You know, I mean, that's a Tesla concept right then and there. You know, maybe even go as far as to wirelessly transmit energy. That was Tesla's, you know, major dream, and I would love to see that happen. And I think that maybe within our lifetimes we will see that accomplished.
Tim, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It's always great catching up with you, and thank you for being here and being a part of our world.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I had a great time today. I hope your listeners enjoyed it as well.
I'm sure they did. We always like to uncover these interesting nuggets of history, science, and the strange. So that's it for this week, kids. Remember, we'll be back again with you with Beyond the Darkness next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with brand new episodes. But keep up with me all week long at midnightinthedesert.com. 5 nights a week of the best in anomalous talk radio. Check it out for yourself at midnightinthedesert.com. And keep up with us on True Crime Tuesday as well. We have to go. Be safe, be kind, love one another. We'll see you again next week right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.